SBC Media.
Welcome to iGaming Daily, analysing the news from the betting and gaming industry all over the globe, supported by the Casino Beat Summit, bringing you the future of play, iGaming strategy, innovation and development.
Be a part of the future of play at the Casino Beat Summit this May. See new game releases, take in our innovation-focused conference agenda, and network with the casino industry elite. Get your tickets now at sbcevents.com.
It was no secret PointsBet was looking to sell off its North American business, so it was no surprise when Fanatics announced earlier this week that it would be buying the company for $150 million. What is surprising, though, is the price tag. On today's episode of iGaming Daily, we'll discuss the terms of the deal and whether or not this is the start of more major U.S. market consolidation. Hi, guys. I'm Jessica Wellman. I'm the editor of SBC Americas, joined by senior journalist for SBC Americas, Charlie Horner, who I am seeing once again, but after seeing you in person last week. I miss you already. Did you get home all right?
I did, yeah. It was an eventful stop in Dublin. I was stuck on the plane for like nearly 3 hours, but it was eventful. I'm missing you already, Jess, too.
Aw, thanks, Charlie. Well, and while we were at the conference was when this news kind of started to bubble up around PointsBet and Fanatics. Obviously, you can go back and listen to old episodes of iGaming Daily last week from the conference. We talked quite a bit about Fanatics CEO Matt King and what he had to say. But while we were doing that, PointsBet's US CEO, Johnny Aitken, abruptly pulled out of the conference. He was scheduled to speak. He canceled at the last minute. And as we were going through these parties and these events, it started to seem more and more like the whispers in the room were that PointsBet Fanatics was a done deal. Charlie, did you have any other things that you saw that made you kind of raise an eyebrow and go, oh, okay, maybe this is what's happening after all?
Well, I mean, mainly when you came over to me and said, hey, I think this is a done deal.
Which is quite fair.
But then, I mean,
I said it in very explicit terms.
And of course, when Matt King was speaking, he did mention quite a bit about market access without actually saying, oh, by the way, we've now got access to 14 new states.
Well, he did trick me just a little bit because I asked specifically about New York when he said he had access to 90% of the market. And he responded, well, we have access to 90% of the profitable market. I think he had a slip of the tongue and then very quickly recovered from it because with this deal, they do get into New York through PointsBet. But first, you know, Charlie, you wrote it up this week. What's kind of the basic term sheet of the Fanatics PointsBet deal?
So, I mean, it's very straight up, $150 million cash in return. Fanatics acquires PointsBet US, their sports betting and iGaming operations. They have a license to use the PointsBet proprietary tech and the Banac tech stack. So what's interesting is no Canada, which you know, was touted to, you know, the sale was touted to be a North American sale. It's turned out that it's just the US. And then the other question really is what happens with Fanatics' deal with Amelco, which of course was a deal to use the Amelco software.
Yeah, I mean, I think the product piece of this is super interesting, right? Because they're in the middle of a very elaborate beta test by sports betting standards with this Amelco product. And as you noted, it's anyone's guess. Is it Banac or is it? I like to say Banache because it just sounds fun. The Banac tech, I think, will help them in terms of in-game pricing and the speed of their pricing. And you can integrate that into kind of the basic Amelco tech stack. For those who don't know, the PointsBet product is decent. I think it rates fairly well. It's not game changing, but everyone does kind of say that the Banac piece of it is what the best part is, that I would think they would take that piece and integrate it into what they're doing that they've already built with Amelco. And then the other piece of this is NBC. My understanding of this deal, correct me if you've heard differently, Charlie, is that Fanatics will inherit and honor the deal that PointsBet has made with NBC Universal. Recall, though, that they've rehashed this deal a couple of times to make it less exclusive, ergo less expensive. And so it's not necessarily as pricey as it may sound. I think that, you know, what is it? $20 million or something is the cap on that deal?
Yeah, that's PointsBet's limit on funding for this is $21 million. I think it is interesting that the Fanatics are taking it on because obviously I know they have renegotiated it a couple of times, but it has made headlines for how costly it's been for PointsBet. And of course, it's a contract. It's an agreement. They have to see it through. But it would be intriguing to see whether Fanatics would look for a further renegotiation or just see it through and let it see out, you know, once it's expired.
What I have, and this is where, you know, legal disclosure, I'm doing purely conjecture here. What we've heard in the rumor mill was that it wasn't so much that the NBC deal wasn't worth the money. It was more that PointsBet didn't have the money to pay for such an expensive thing. NBC Sports is a great entity. You're getting your Sunday night football game where it's the only game running and you get a ton of eyeballs on it. So for Fanatics to have that heading into the football season is a really great asset. You have, you know, a whole range of other sports, lots of great college football and that sort of thing that comes with the deal as well. That I think, you know, it's a bit of a steal, to be honest, given what people were paying for these kinds of deals not 1 year ago. And that was, to go back to Matt King's keynote, the advantage of being a second mover is that prices just go down. And I think the price tag on this sale is a great example of that, right? $150 million certainly is lower than I think PointsBet wanted and expected. You can look at kind of ancillary things just a couple years ago. You know, Monkey Knife Fight was a $350 million deal. Believe Action Network coming on to Better Collective was like a $500 million deal. That to see that precipitously drop off is kind of an indication of where we're at in the ecosystem right now, right, Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, we don't even have to go that far back. I mean, just let's go back to February when Penn completed the acquisition of Barstool, and that was $500 million, which I know people were saying that it was quite a good price at the time. But then now, with that added context of this deal, $150 million looks like a pretty decent deal for Fanatics.
It is. But I think, you know, here's the problem. If you are very openly for sale, like PointsBet was, and there aren't that many people that need you, it becomes the seller who gets to kind of dictate the price. This is great for Fanatics. They have market access. They improve their tech stack. They, you know, have a sense of the lay of the land of a lot of different states. But I think you could argue, I mean, I don't know what your take is. I think there is an argument that Fanatics didn't necessarily need this.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the main asset that they're getting out of it, apart from the tech, obviously, is that market access through 14 different states. Now, if you want to accelerate your growth and try and catch up with your FanDuel and your DraftKings as fast as possible, then you can see the appeal of that market access. However, if you're wanting to take it a little slower and really be a second mover and learn about the market as you go along, then do you necessarily need to jump into 14 markets in one jump? Or did you want to maybe pay the access fees into those states on an individual basis? I mean, that's the decision that they've weighed up and ultimately they've gone with, no, we want the market access now.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like buying things in bulk, right? Like, could they have gone around and gotten cheaper market access deals than what PointsBet probably signed on for their market access deals a couple years ago? Yes. Do you pay a little bit of a premium to just save yourself some time, especially now that we're, you know, I say this in May, but right now you're already kind of thinking, people are making their football season plans right now. So to be able to think ahead to that and not have to worry about getting into individual states with individual deals, it certainly does. It is a benefit and probably worth the relatively small price. Question is, there's a chance PointsBet stockholders don't approve this. They certainly weren't happy with the deal, according to the price of the stock, which dropped, I think it was like 30% or something in that range upon the announcement. This is where, you know, producers fact check me later and we can just voice over exactly what the right one is. Just know it was a precipitous dip, and a sale like this does require, since PointsBet is 18.4%. I was not close at all. I fact checked myself. So still a fair amount. Point remains, the shareholders do have to sign off on this. And if they feel like they're not getting a good value on that price, they could potentially send it back and they could torpedo this deal. How likely that is, I don't know. I think if I'm a PointsBet stockholder, the question is, who's giving you a better deal?
Who's giving you a better deal, and how can you sustain your US operations without extra capital? Because we mentioned it on our Q1 podcast a couple of weeks back. The PointsBet US is running out of cash and running out of cash pretty quick. So if I'm a shareholder and I'm looking at this deal, I'm thinking maybe we could have got a better price. Maybe if there was a magic secondary bidder somewhere. But, you know, we don't have the luxury of that choice. And with cash running out, with this NBC deal, which, okay, we've renegotiated it, it's a little cheaper, it's still, you know, taking up some of those cash reserves. I think it's best for everyone to just take the deal.
I mean, and not just PointsBet US. You have to think about PointsBet is actually an Australian company by nature, and that Australian wing of the company is not doing particularly well either. That while, you know, you're essentially selling off what is kind of your healthiest piece of the company to try to save the company overall. And to your point, Charlie, I just don't know who else is buying. So that sets us up perfectly for the next question. We keep saying that this is unsustainable. We can't have 25 operators, but as we've seen by this, there's not the biggest appetite for some of this consolidation. So do you think we see more deals like this going forward, or do you think people are just going to go out of business?
Well, I think there's only two options. It's either it happens or operators do go out of business, because it isn't sustainable to have so many operators in a lot of these markets and have two operators command 80% market share. And we've talked about this a lot, where operators are spending a hell of a lot of cash in marketing and promotions to gain 5-6% market share. So I think consolidation is inevitable. I think the question is right, that, you know, who's the buyer in all of this? You know, we've seen Fanatics just take PointsBet without much competition. We're led to believe that Kindred are looking to sell off some of its assets as well. There could be others. We've seen MaximBet drop out the game. Fubo have dropped out the game. We've seen Monkey Knife Fight close down. So
Churchill pulled out as well.
Pulled out. Yeah, I mean, and I was on a panel, or listening in on a panel last week, in the Ontario panel, and they were having the same discussions, is that they have 70 sites with 46 operators. After the first, you know, 2 or 3 years, you know, people are going to start pulling out. I mean, we've already seen Coolbet come out of Ontario as well. So I don't think this is necessarily just a US thing, but a pan-North American trend, that we are going to see a lot more consolidation. Whether that is through going out of business or sales remains to be seen. What do you think, Jess?
I mean, I'm torn. You know, you covered that panel with Richard Schwartz on it last week, and he made the point, as the CEO, I have to do my diligence to listen to all offers. I think Rush Street would be a great acquisition target. given that they have strong land-based presences in the Northeast and Midwest. They've done fairly well in terms of, you know, getting that 4 or 5% that you kind of need to be in that second tier of players. But then I spec it out further and think to myself, who buys this? That's kind of the problem is, you know, I don't know. And what we haven't seen is if one 5% company buys another 5% company, does that mean their market share becomes 10%? And Fanatics is going to be a great example of seeing, although it'll be tough to tell. You know, I'm very curious what happens if they debut and their market share is 7%. Is that a win? Maybe you've gotten points, but relatively cheaply to help get to that number. But I think the biggest question for people as they're looking at these M&A targets is, well, what does this really necessarily bring to our bottom line? And I don't know if anybody is offering something that is just so completely differentiated and stands out from the rest of the crowd that it would make a material difference at the end of the day. You look at kind of this second tier, Penn had its big acquisition with Barstool, and as you mentioned, it was not cheap. And what have they gotten at the end of the day out of it? Not as much as they want to, I'm sure. They've gotten themselves in like another, you know, PR hot water incident just last week and continue to have those. But what they're not getting is, at the end of the day, that market share that's so important. So I don't know. I mean, I think there will be more consolidation. I think Bally's, we've seen, is in the mood to be a strategic buyer. They've always been somewhat calculated and willing to spend, but, you know, not huge sums of money aside from, you know, Monkey Knife Fight and GameSys. I think really where you're going to see more consolidation is actually, and you can go back and listen to our colleagues talk about this week, is on the online casino side with Aristocrat and NeoGames. Those are the deals that deservedly have a $1 billion valuation, because if you can develop a state-of-the-art casino product, you're going to be 10 times better off than the state-of-the-art sports betting product.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing we're seeing a lot is online casino is making so much more money than sports betting. But it's just, we need more states. We need more state launches, because you're never going to find or realize that potential that online casino has if, you know, you're only in six states.
Not super populous states either. You have Michigan and Pennsylvania, which are fairly large, but I don't think anybody is, you know, super thrilled to be in Connecticut or Delaware.
I think there could be a lot more consolidation or activity in that regard if, for instance, we did see a New York go ahead with an iGaming bill. Unlikely at this stage for this year. We'll see next year, but I think having a large market like that could entice a few more deals.
Yeah, and I think you kind of segued into perfectly where we're at for 2023, because we're starting to see even more states that we were, you know, holding on to our last dying breath of maybe getting some sort of legislation come through that have come to an end this week. I'll take Missouri. Missouri had a bit of flurry of activity last week around a bill, but really it was truly just a gesture to Denny Hoskins, the senator who has been rather obstructionist. And while it was sports betting related, they knew that they were glomming this onto a bill that was not going anywhere. In Texas, though, we're done as well, right, Charlie?
Yeah, we are. Again, there was a little flurry of activity towards the end of last week. I think we were scurrying around at the conference because we had obviously Brazil's regulations dropped, and there was a vote in Texas on the same day. But ultimately, yeah, we couldn't get enough support for sports betting and casino. And yeah, that's dead for another year.
No, it's dead for 2 years.
For 2 years.
Here's
of
a
course.
Fun.
Yeah,
here's
is.
A fun yeah. civics lesson to cap off the day. Texas lawmakers only meet in odd numbered years, so it will be 2025 before we really get another crack at this. So yeah, it's proving to be a fairly disappointing year legislatively. 2023, Vermont and Kentucky get sports betting, and I think that's probably all we're going to get. But anything that does come up, we will certainly be covering on sbcamericas.com. So be sure to always head over there and check out the latest news and keep tuning in for all the latest and greatest conversations around the gaming industry on iGaming Daily.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of iGaming Daily, brought to you in conjunction with the Casino Beat Summit being held at the Intercontinental Malta on the 23rd to the 25th of May. If you want to find out more about some of the subjects raised today, feel free to explore any of the sites in the SBC News Network or check out the latest edition of the SBC Leaders magazine. Happy reading.